For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Jim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. A big week in football with the release of the government's fan-led review into football governance. Bigger impact on the wider world of football, perhaps, than just non-league, but we talked to one of those who contributed opinions and thoughts to the review about the non-league implications. He himself knows football as a fan, an administrator, and a journalist, as well as chairman of one of the most progressive non-league clubs around, a club already trailblazing many of the recommendations extolled in the review. Plus, I talked to a young manager back at an old club and looking to take them and his career to the next level, as well as having a positive impact on the lives of all those he deals with. Rounding off the show, David Richardson, senior writer at the Non-League paper, helps with this week's news, including a busy old time on the managerial merry-go-round. Plus, there's a usual look ahead to the stories in this weekend's Non-League paper. Much to come, sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So let's start with the big news of the week. Late Wednesday night, the Department of Culture, Media and Sport published the findings of the fan-led review of football governance, headed by Tracy Crouch MP. 162 pages to those who care to read it. It's been warmly received, it appears, across football, but as ever on this show, we needed a proper non-league insight. There was only one man who came to mind, somebody I've worked alongside on the board at the Isthmian League, somebody who has experience as chairman of a progressive non-league club with many successful divisions, including a women's team competing in the second tier of the professional game, somebody who as a journalist has travelled around the world for football and written about life as a fan for years, and somebody mentioned in the report as providing a valuable contribution to the collection of thoughts and opinions. I'm of course talking of the football tourist himself, at The Ball Is Round on Twitter. It's Stuart Fuller. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Stuart.
Hi Tim, how you doing?
Well, I'm good, and I'm pleased I've got you on. A brief CV there, probably many things I've missed too, including the 67 matches you've already been to across the country this season. For me, that gives you a fairly decent finger of the pulse of football, and in particular of football clubs.
Yeah, I love my football, there's nothing I like better on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night and going out and seeing some games. I'm lucky because where I live in Southeast London, there's plenty of teams around us. But it's interesting because you go there, it's not just about watching the football. It's about, you know, looking at how clubs are doing things, looking at, you know, good things that clubs are doing, how they're bringing fans in, some great initiatives. And, you know, imitation is the greatest form of flattery. That's what I always say. And, you know, we'll take things back to Lewis and we'll look at them and see what works.
Yeah, and I'll come to Lewis in a minute because and people will see why. I we'll start with the report. And I said you provided thoughts to the fan-led review. Have you had a chance to read through the report yet?
I've looked at the summary recommendations and where I've seen a few matters of interest there. I've certainly gone back into the main report. It's very comprehensive. There's some very good things in there. I'm very enthused about some of the recommendations for the women's game, especially, and about the recommendation of its own review, because I think that's long overdue. The question is, it's just really, you know, what happens next? I think Tracy's done a fantastic job on this, and as you said, myself and the club contributed through the FSA. So there's some really good stuff in there. Great stuff about trying to encourage and leverage fan ownership. And let's just hope that this acts as a tipping point for the game in the UK.
Yeah, the big focus I highlight about the whole thing is it's all about sustainability in communities. And week in, week out, we talk about the essential part of that for non-league clubs to survive in the modern era, because there's so many other things that can distract people, and we need people to be continuing and getting involved with their non-league football clubs. An important part of the report as well was all about the flow of money through the pyramid and getting it further down. I think my big concern was that there's mention of the pyramid, but it's more mention of the pyramid down to steps one and two and the National League, and we need to make sure that it filters through. But of course, this is, you know, as you say, it's very comprehensive, but I'm sure there's this is 162 pages, there's probably a thousand times of that of research and other things that are going to spin from it. So it is a case of getting the ball rolling and making sure that positive things do come from this report.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I really like the idea of the, you know, the IRS, the independent regulator. But as you said, you know, it talks about it being the regulator for the professional game. And we're now seeing the professional game, you know, if we go back to the dark days of a year and a bit ago where we had elite and non-elite, you know, elite went down to step two. And my worry is, you know, recent announcements about funding coming in as well. For the clubs at step one and step two. Don't get me wrong, you know, they deserve it, but it also needs to flow a bit further down as well. And I think that, and again, with the independent regulator, some of the challenges that are seen in the professional game are, you know, things like, you know, owners and directors tests and some of the individuals who get involved in clubs at the professional level, you know, some of them hone their skills in the, you know, steps three, four, five, six, seven. So we need some of that same governance just applying across the board into football.
Yeah, and I think it's important to acknowledge how essential the non-league pyramid is to the rest of football. So everything, you know, down to step seven, even below, how many things have been learnt at that level of the game that have been taken up to a higher level, a higher stage. And I think that's my big concern from this is that the non-league game may get left behind again. And it's for people like yourself, people like me, other people and non-league fans as well, to make sure that these changes come with non-league in mind.
Mm. Yeah, one of the chinks of light in this is that Tracy herself is a fan of the game at the grassroots. You know, her club is Chatham Town. The Chatham Town have, you know, they were at step four, they dropped down into step five. They've done a huge amount of work. Absolutely fantastic redevelopment of their ground, 3G pitch in place, massive community outreach. And I'm hoping that she, you know, her experience of seeing how that has generated revenue, but also in encourage the community to get involved, that she's got that in the front of her mind when, you know, when we start talking about the next steps. And I hope genuinely that she stays involved in this, because I had a lot of time for her when she was a minister. I actually interviewed her 15 years ago for the website. And just, you know, I thought she was fantastic then. You know, someone who really knows the game.
So someone that knows the game and someone that's actually got stuff done. I mean, for a government review to be out, so quickly, and also to be accepted so widely, it does seem that, you know, across football, everybody's saying, "Yeah, great idea. Let's get things moving."
Yeah, yeah, and as I say, I hope that she can still carry on and keep that momentum going. Now that she's published the report and she's given the, you know, the resources and the accountability and the responsibility to take it further. Because I think she's great. She's perfect for this role.
Yeah. And one of the aspects of the review that could impact more on non-league is actually beyond the original remit of the review, I think, as well. A proposal that there's more needs to be done in regards to the welfare of players, and particularly those released by pro clubs and their mental welfare. Mm. So often at non-league, we find players almost broken when they come out of the pro game. And as much as we try, we sometimes haven't got the resources to help them as much as we'd like. So that's going to be a positive for, you know, for our level of the game, as well as the people that were involved.
Yeah, I've spoken to a number of players that we've had at Lewis over the last few years, and some of their stories have been just absolutely shocking. You know, released by clubs and literally they're told that they're no longer required, and it's almost like an embarrassment for the club to have them around. The club don't want them around anymore. They see them as, you know, they might taint other players and things like that. So it literally is, some of these players are told, and they're literally told, you know, out the same day. And you've got youngsters who are maybe 17, 18, who have done nothing in their teenage years apart from play football. And all of a sudden it's like, well, what do I do now? And there is nothing for them. And that's the real, real shame. I think some clubs get it. I think some clubs are a lot better than others.
But there still is a real problem in the game of this sort of like this hoovering up of talent, young talent, and almost like this, you know, a factory process. And right, okay, no, you're not going to make it, so we're just going to jettison you out. And then that needs to be addressed.
And you know, I don't think there were any real surprises from someone like yourself that's got his finger on the pulse to see what's happening within football. I don't think there are any real surprises from this review. It's just the fact that it's now out there. They cleared the air in the room, and now someone's got to pick up the ball and run with it.
Yeah, it's funny. See, I remember, you know, probably a decade ago, talking to five or six other sort of amateur football writers at the time, and we came up with sort of like a blueprint for non-league football at the time, and we thought it was brilliant. And you know, a lot of those ideas would never see the light of day. But what I think this does is it's sort of a similar thing, but taking it to a much wider level. That you've got, you know, if you put one person in a room and say, give me, you know, a handful of things that could change football, you know, they're going to give you some good ideas. But then you bring the second person in, and they're going to, you know, deliver on top of that and on top of that. So you've got the incremental brain trust of football in this report. And I think that's what's really, really good. And you know, the extensive process, you only have to look at the people that have contributed. And it's just amazing how they managed to get through so many people and get their opinions from so many people.
Yeah, and I mentioned you having your finger on the pulse. One of the final recommendations of the report is the need for parity for the women's game. And at Lewis, I think your progression alongside the many professional clubs has probably spearheaded that campaign almost.
Yeah, we're now in our fifth season of having budget parity for our two teams. And, you know, back in 2017, people doubted it. They scoffed at the idea. At the end of that season, our men got promoted from step four to step three, and our women got a place in the FA Women's Championship. Potentially the most successful season the club's ever had, by levelling the playing budgets. Now we're in our fifth season here. It's probably the best men's team we've constructed in the last decade. We had a disappointing second half on Tuesday night where we lost to Clinton Casuals after absolutely dominating the game. That could have taken a third. We're fourth in the league. Our women's team had a shocker of a result a couple of weeks ago against the bottom of the table, Watford, lost 2-1 at home. But if they'd have won that, they'd have been second now. And, you know, second, unfortunately, only one goes up to the Super League. But, you know, we're still knocking on that door, and we believe that we're building something there based on the parity that we'll see our women's team play at the highest level of English football within a couple of years.
And there's lots of talk about, you know, having more women involved in the game. But how important is it also to have a women's team alongside the men's team within your wider club construction?
Oh, and hugely important. And there's so much crossover now. There's so much collaboration in the way they work. You know, so you'll see, you know, when the men play, you'll see quite a lot of the women's players will be there, the management team. Because, you know, the structure at the top of the club is the same. We all report up in the same way. So what we've got is we've got a football club that wants to play in a specific way. Doesn't matter if it's man, woman, girl, boy. And that's the ethos that we're driving down into the club. You know, we've now got teams in the club at under 14s level. And we want to be developing these players and these local players. Doesn't matter if it's boys or girls that are going to be knocking on the door of the first teams in 3, 4, 5 years time. So to us, it's about, you know, that whole equality piece and that whole community piece both go hand in hand. And we're just starting to see the green shoots and how this is, you know, sort of really, really panning out for us.
And yeah, talking about being ahead of the game, you know, further, and this report comes out after Lewis as a club have launched a new ownership drive to get fans more involved and part of their football club. How does all that work from your point of view? Is that just a case of getting more fan involvement, fan understanding, investment, or is it all of those?
It's all of them. It's all of them. We embraced the concept of fan ownership 11 years ago. We've grown to just under 2,000 owners around the world, and I think probably most people at the club would probably say three or four years ago, we were doing an okay job at giving value to our owners. But what we've done over the last couple of years is we really invested in what it means to be an owner of the club, you know, buying into the ethos, the values of the club. We do a lot more community based projects with our owners. We have a lot better communication, so we do a monthly town hall meeting. Any of our owners can join. We now stream our games, our women's games and our men's games, not in the blackout period, to our owners. So if you're an owner, you get free access to the stream. If you're not an owner, you can't watch it. We're just about to launch an owner's app, which gives the owners the ability to directly feedback on things. So we'll be asking them polls, you know, they'll get exclusive merchandise. So what we want to try and do is not only create this movement of people of like minds, but also really deliver back some value to our owners, so they feel as if they're part of the club. You know, we've just gone through had the AGM on Monday and the election. We've got three brand new members joining our board. One of whom, Lucy Mills, actually works for FC Barcelona. She works on the trust at the foundation side there, so she's joining our board. So we've got some really interesting people now coming on board the board who haven't got football background. Because at the end of the day, we can find people with football backgrounds all over the place. We don't need that. We need people that have got, you know, business acumen, skills in governance, skills in fundraising, skills in, you know, community organisations. That's what we need, and we're now getting that skill set on board.
And that's great to hear, because week in, week out, I bang on, banging the table again there, that how important it is that clubs are run as a business. Now, you're proving that you're run as a business using that business acumen of the people that you've got involved, but you're running it in the right way because you're very much fan-run, fan-led as a club.
Yes, but it's incredibly important that we are also looking at developing the commercial side. You know, we're very lucky. We have two or three really, really good commercial partnerships in place. Kappa have been magnificent with us for over four seasons as our technical kit and playing partner, and Lyland Scott came on board this time last year, and they've been brilliant, absolutely fantastic. They've actually, I think they released an ad this week that's going to go in mainstream media, where the first 10 seconds of the ad is of a girl playing football in a Lewis kit. So they are 100% behind what we're doing. They're aligned to us. But that's great. So what we're looking for now is we're looking for the next partners and the next partners who want to come and join this, like, a quality football club off the pitch, but also use that for, you know, for a lot of the other community aspects they do. We've been working this week with one of the emergency services about delivering leadership training to some of their aspiring leaders. So we did it from a football point of view as to how we develop leaders. So we had our CEO Maggie was involved, our performance director Kelly, our women's captain Rianne, and just to give them an idea to bring leadership training, but to give it a real slant on football and how we do it in football.
So another example of how non-league is leading the way. On the pitch, you know, you've mentioned the women's team already. The men's team, new management team headed by Tony Russell, they're settling quickly. Fourth in the table. And again, there's me banging on the table again. A well-run club off the field creates a well-run team on the field, but it isn't always the same the other way around. off the field needs to work first in order to build long-term success.
Yeah, it's you know, again, it's little things. It's about, you know, we firmly believe in that we are a company that employs staff, and our players are staff. So it's really important. The things like, you know, when a player joins, we give the player an induction. They understand what it means to play for the club. You know, we take care of, you know, 100% everyone. Payroll is done. They're paid every Thursday. You know, we have a support network. So we have an HR manager. We have access to a psychologist. Everything we'll do for our players, because they're our employees. And if you've got a happy player, when they step onto the pitch, because of they know that the club's got their back, you'll get that extra performance from them completely.
And a trip to Wingate and Finchley, I think, on Saturday in the league. You guys do have some travel to do in a season. And that's fans as well as players, management and committee.
Yeah, absolutely. Wingate, it's a great away trip. We love that. There's a couple of really good pubs in Finchley High Road. And Aaron, the chairman at Wingate, I love Aaron. We spend a lot of time talking and moaning about various other clubs and managers and people like that. So I'm looking forward to seeing him on Saturday. He's always a great host. It's fine. I mean, you know, you have a lot of travel, as you guys know yourself from Hazen Yedin. But you get on with it, you know. We had to go to East Thurrock on a Tuesday night, you know, Dartford tunnels closed, you know, swings and roundabouts. You just have to get on with it. And we know if we're lucky enough and we get to step two next year, then the travel's going to be more. But that's what happens. So, it's just something you have to accept.
You have to accept, but you have to do it in the right way as well. I can get you on without mentioning your lockdown project, I guess it was, wasn't it? I think progressing with a book about, well, how football was dealing with the COVID scenario.
Yes, absolutely. It's called Out of Step. It's been published by Oakley Books. We're sort of in the fight. It's funny, actually, because it's been delayed at the moment by, I've got to write essentially another chapter that basically explains, like, all the people I spoke to in the book, what they're doing now. So many. It's funny. So, you know, I spoke to Tony as a manager when he was at Cray. So it's like, you know, Tony's come to us, you know, Hugo was our manager, he'd left us. And, you know, so I'm literally going through it at the moment and trying to work out exactly where everyone has gone. But we're literally at the final stages of it. So we're hoping to get something out probably early January. And it'll be bizarre looking back because, you know, as you know yourself, because, you know, you helped me on some of this. It was only a year ago I was writing it, but everything has changed so much in a year. And it's almost like that whole year has been forgotten. So that's why I want to get it out as a reminder of what it was like living and trying to run a football club during the pandemic.
Yeah, well, it's certainly something that I'm looking forward to reading about. It was tough. It was difficult times, but I'm pleased that someone's documented it because, you know, again, yeah, nowadays we'd have everything on social media, but it's still not the same as looking back to a proper documented account of things. So, Stuart, I've taken up far too much of your time already. I really appreciate your insight into the review, but also your insight into how things can work in non-league and be successful on and off the field. And hopefully, you know, as you say, imitation. If there's other clubs out there that want to know, maybe how to run a non-league football club in the modern world, take a look at Lewis, and I'm sure Stuart will be more than happy to give you a few tips and guide you on. Stuart Fuller, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Sure, thanks, Tim.
So this weekend sees the FA Trophy second round. Entry of clubs from step two that ramp up the competition. £3,750 in prize money for the winners of each match, £1,000 for the losers. Our next guest is no stranger to the club he now finds himself managing, and he's been in the current role for less than a month. As a manager at Curzon Aston, he faces a tough FA Trophy test at home to managerless Chester on Saturday. But I'm pleased to say he joins us here. So it's a warm welcome to the Non-League Football Show, to Adam Lakeland. Welcome, Adam.
Thanks a lot, Tim. Nice to be here.
Well, it's good to finally get you on. I say a month in the role. I think it was the 28th of October, Farsley Celtic and Curzon agreed terms for you to join. And it was pleasing to see that it was all done fairly amicably and professionally.
It was, yeah. And it was done pretty quickly as well, to be honest. The official approach came in, I think, the day after we played filed when I was at Farsley, and took a couple of days just to think about it and speak to, you know, my family and one or two other people within the game. And, you know, having had a couple of days to kind of think about it, I obviously asked Farsley for permission to speak to Curzon. And from that point on, it was all wrapped up relatively quickly, really. And, you know, I'd like to thank Farsley again for, you know, the way in which they kind of handled it. I know they were disappointed for me to be moving on, and obviously really grateful for the opportunity I've got now at Curzon, and thoroughly enjoying it so far.
Yeah, you had a successful time at Curzon Aston before in the dugout as first team coach to John Flanagan. Has it always been one of those clubs you continue to look out for their results?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, it's a great club. Obviously, I had very fond memories in the two full seasons I did here working under John and Ian Nevison. And, you know, still to date, the most successful spell in the club's history. So, you know, great memories here. Feel like, you know, I played my small part in helping the club get to the level that it currently finds itself at. And for me to kind of have gone away and you know, managed in my own right and now I'll be back here as the manager. You know, there has been great strides made by the club off the pitch, and, you know, the ambition is to just continue to enhance everything at the club, both on and off the pitch, moving forwards. And, you know, I'm delighted to be back here. Some great people at this club. They do things properly, and I've been really, you know, impressed and welcomed back with open arms, really, in the time that I've been back here, and just relishing the upcoming fixtures now.
Yeah, and we often talk to new managers who come in with, you know, the club, their new clubs in the doldrums, perhaps below where they're expected to be, and then they all come in and they talk about a project. For you, the club are probably as high as they've ever been. And how far can you take the club now?
Well, I think, I know it's boring, but we've just got to look at one game at a time. I've come into the club and as you rightly say, you know, they've had an excellent start to the season. Probably just did a little bit of a bad patch just in the two or three games prior to me coming in. Obviously, the manager leaving. We've now entered, you know, a really difficult run of games with Fylde, Brackley, York, Gateshead, now Chester coming up at the weekend. We have Alfreton who are flying, Hereford who have kind of had a resurgence, Kidderminster. So we've got, you know, a lot of really, really difficult games that we've already played since I've arrived at the club, and we'll continue to play in the upcoming weeks. But the games that the players should be relishing and that we're all, you know, looking forward to, you know, regards to how far can we take the club? Only time will tell. You know, my intentions since kind of getting the job here are, I would love to, you know, be able to manage the team to its highest ever league position, which would be anything higher than 10th. And if you can achieve that, then you're not a great deal away from the playoff mm-hmm. positions. So we've just got to keep working hard. You know, I think whilst the team had a great run in the early stages of the season, quite a lot of, you know, those fixtures were maybe favourable. You know, I think quite a few teams who were struggling to find the feet early on in the season, Curzon probably played them at a good time. And obviously that momentum and that confidence from winning games probably enabled them to keep that run going to a point. But there's certainly a lot of aspects to our game that we can improve and that I've already seen signs of improvement with. And it's just a case of keep working with the players. And I have to say, I have been really impressed with the group of players here, a really good group of honest, hard-working lads. But they've got a lot of quality and ability as well that, you know, I'm really excited about what we can do with this team for the rest of this season.
Yeah, we talk week in, week out about the competitiveness of the National North and you know, how tough it is. You only recently played Curzon when you were Farsley manager, so I guess you probably already had a good idea of the players you were inheriting anyway.
I did, yeah, that's right. I mean, we played them when I was at Farsley, only a two or three weeks before I actually came and joined Curzon. So obviously done a lot of research and homework on them, you know, individuals and collectively as a team. So I had a reasonable understanding of them anyway. Plus, you know, as manager, it's your job to kind of study most teams or all teams in the league that you're in. And, you know, because you've got to play them all eventually. And obviously with it being a former club of mine, I always kind of paid extra attention to how they were getting on and the results they were having, the players that they had. So, yeah, came in with quite a good understanding of the players. But you only ever really get to, you know, truly know them and the capabilities and qualities, weaknesses, when you have time to actually work with them, you know, on a regular basis. And as I say, I've you know, thoroughly enjoyed my short time here so far, the time that I've been able to work with the players on the training pitch. And, you know, I look forward to keep on, you know, working with them, hopefully keep on improving them. And if we can do that, then hopefully we can continue having a good season.
Yeah. Bringing in some new faces as well will obviously make a little bit of difference and help you mould the team. But only 13 games in what, a 42-game league season. I think this season's going to be, yeah, probably more than any, it's going to be tougher on players as we adjust to normality. So the size of your squad and the depth of your squad is going to be probably more vital than ever before.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, there's clubs up and down the country that are, you know, suffering through, you know, the volume of injuries and particularly muscular injuries. And there's got to be something in that where there's, you know, been obviously a layoff for players and players haven't been playing the volume of games that maybe they've been used to. And then they're straight back into the thick of the action and people are pulling up. And as you say, you know, we've brought in, you know, three players since I arrived at the club. It was never my intention to come in here and kind of, you know, rip things up, because there's obviously a lot of good work already been going on prior to me coming back to the club. But we've had to bring bodies in just because we've had injuries to, you know, long-term to the likes of Dom Knowles, who needs an operation. Adam Thomas was out of the team for a short while. Harry Flowers is still out of the team. Matty Waters was injured, and as well as one or two others. So we've needed to bring in, you know, bodies. Obviously, Adam Barton's a player that I know really well, and he just oozes class and will, you know, be a really great addition for us. But he can cover us in a couple of positions. And we brought in Matty Rain to give us extra cover at left back. And obviously, Niall Bell on loan for a month initially, who, you know, he's probably not hit the heights that we were hoping as yet. But he's another player who's not played a lot of football, and it will take him time to kind of get up to speed. So we've needed to bring the bodies in to give us that extra little bit of strength in depth. And once we have everybody fit and available for selection, then we've got a really competitive group of players that will hopefully keep that pressure on one another and you know, work hard to get in the team and work even harder to stay in it.
And as that squad selection, yeah, maybe played a part in you being a little goal shy in recent games. No goals in the last three league games, although only one conceded in that time, too. Or is that more a result in a slightly different formation and style of play from you coming in?
Probably a bit of both, if I'm being honest. I mean, you know, when I came into the club, obviously we knew we had a really tough run of fixtures, as I mentioned earlier. And what I wanted us to be able to do in this run of games was make sure that we gave ourselves a chance in games. You know, I think to go out toe-to-toe with some of the full-time teams in the league, especially, you know, it can sometimes be a bit naive. And you know, one thing that I've kind of said to the players is, you know, if we're strong and we defend well and we keep clean sheets, or we, you know, conceding the maximum of one on as many occasions as we possibly can this season, then we'll always give ourselves a chance of putting points on the board more often than not. And you know, we have been defensively really solid. Obviously, we've conceded two goals in the four league games. Both have come from one was a thunderbolt free kick from Nick Horton against Fylde, and the other one on Tuesday was a well worked corner by Gateshead where Mike Williamson got free. But you know, four games in open play, we've kept clean sheets against, you know, Brackley, York, Fylde and Gateshead, three of which are full-time. Brackley are never a pushover. They're always a top team and a difficult one to play against. So we have to take confidence from how solid we've been and organised we've been. And that was one thing that I felt I would add to the team was extra detail and organisation and preparation going into games, which I think we've demonstrated. Now it's just a case of probably, you know, the players understanding that I do want them to be brave, and I do want them to have that little bit more courage to play, because we've got a lot of good footballers here. And I think, you know, our best chance of creating more chances, scoring more goals, will be through us being braver with the ball. And it's just trying to find that balance of, you know, having that bravery, that courage, and that attacking threat, whilst also having that defensive structure as well. And that'll maybe take a little bit of time, but you know, it's still early days. I've been really, you know, positive about the way in which we've played and competed in the game so far. And we'll just keep working hard to improve on all aspects of our game moving into the upcoming fixtures.
Yeah, and on you touched on there being part time in this very tough division. I've spoken about the, you know, the new normality that we're all trying to get to grips with. Away from the pitch, your pro sport coaching focusing on activity in schools and younger kids as well, but in particularly you focus on the add-ons to the rest of what you do in your life that comes from physical exercise. So the bonuses that it adds to your ability in maths and things like that. I guess as a manager at non-league, particularly a part-time club in a full-time division, your attention is more the understanding of what the add-ons beyond sport that they're doing are and how they can have a negative impact on that performance.
Yeah, I mean, it's full on. That's the way I like it. You know, I work hard. I enjoy working hard, but I enjoy, you know, working with people and trying to make a difference. You know, I'm very, very fortunate that, you know, I'm now managing a fantastic club in Curzon Ashton at a very competitive level of football, pitting my wits against, you know, some excellent managers, a lot of full-time teams with some very, very talented players. And that's a challenge that, you know, I relish. You know, but I also have the opportunity within my day job to also make a difference on, you know, children from, you know, as young as 2 years old right through. So, you know, being in a job that's based around, you know, being physically active and having that general health and physical and mental well-being is incredibly rewarding. But I do have that competitive nature within my bones, and I get that kick from my job here at Curzon. But it's any manager will tell you, you know, managing any football club, certainly at our level and even the levels below, it's a full-time job. You know, you're always on the phone. You've always got people onto you. You know, you're always dedicating time to, you know, watching footage of the opposition and, you know, trying to get players in, trying to get players out. And it's a full-time job. And I think if you don't give it your all, then you get found out eventually and you don't achieve what everybody wants to achieve, which is ultimately, you know, winning games of football on a Tuesday and a Saturday. So it's full on, Tim.
It doesn't help when you get odd journalists ringing you up on a Thursday evening either, does it?
Well, no, but that's part of the job as well. And, you know, I certainly don't mind doing that because it helps to, you know, enhance the profile of the club that, you know, I'm managing. And, you know, it's always nice to talk to different people and to put your opinions and your thoughts out there. So I've always got time for that. It is part of the job. It's a part of the job that I certainly don't mind, and I'll always give my my time to. Plus, it helps with the it helps break up the travel time when you're travelling into training, as I am. So it's been a welcomed call.
Yeah. And you've had a few years in management now at Norfolk Victoria, Farsley, at Curzon. What's the biggest headache you face every week that maybe most of us onlookers never see?
I think there's many. You know, there are many. I think the more experienced you are, the easier it does get, because there's not as much that you haven't perhaps seen. I mean, I'm only 37, but I've been managing since I was 21, so I've got, you know, probably more experience than a lot of people that are maybe 10 years my senior. So, you know, and managing at the clubs that I've managed so far, I've seen a hell of a lot of good and bad, and that only, you know, I think helps build your resilience, you know, build up kind of your experiences so that you kind of don't get shocked the same, shall we say, if you do get, you know, some hurdles that you've got across. But I think probably, you know, the hardest thing for probably any manager would be leaving players out the team or leaving players out of the squad completely, and particularly, you know, asking players to move on when they're no longer required. You know, that's always probably the most unpleasant part of the job, but it's also a necessary one, and it's just part and parcel of the role. But I think certainly, you know, we all as managers put in so much time and effort and hard work, and ultimately that's through our love of the game. You know, we're not managing at this level part-time certainly to become, you know, wealthy. We do it because we love the game and we enjoy the challenge, and we've all got it within our makeup as people to be competitive and to try and win. And, you know, it's not all plain sailing. It is up and down, but that's why we love the game.
Yeah, and yeah, that's a thing that we try and get across every week in, week out, that, you know, it's fair enough for fans to be critical and, you know, have their own opinions, but yeah, you are doing it for the love, not necessarily the praise and the benefits to your bank balance. So obviously you've got a massive game at the weekend, Chester visiting. I mean, Jono and Bernard departing there as managers at Chester this week. Yeah, you could be on the receiving end of the bounce back ability type thing. We often see from teams changing managers in tough times. Can you prepare for in any way for that sort of impact on a game?
Well, you can, you know, let the players know that it is going to be difficult. I mean, we would have been letting them know that anyway, because, you know, Jono and Bernard's teams have never been easy to play against, really. And it was always going to be a very, very difficult game on Saturday. You know, as you say, sometimes when a manager leaves a club, the players can be galvanised a little bit. You know, they put an interim manager in there and there's no real pressure on them or the players. The shackles are off and they can maybe go out and play with that little bit more freedom, that little bit less pressure. And that, of course, from our side this weekend could make, you know, things a little bit more difficult than maybe they would have been ordinarily. But we'll just prepare the players, you know, the best that we can, as we always do. The personnel for Chester isn't going to change. If it does, it isn't going to be, you know, a great deal. Maybe one or two players out the team, one or two different players in. Of course, they may, you know, change shape, and that's just something that we've got to be prepared for, which we will be ready for. But I think certainly in the early stages of any cup game, you've got to match the work rate and the intensity of the opposition, and I think that's something that I fully expect to see from Chester in the early stages of the game on Saturday. You know, they'll be working incredibly hard. They'll try and, you know, come out the traps really quickly and get off to a positive start. And it's important for us to, you know, ensure that we match those levels and that tempo in the early stages of the game. And then once it kind of settles down, that we demonstrate that quality and that composure that we did in the second half here on Tuesday, and hopefully that'll see us come through, you know, what is going to be a difficult test.
Yeah, well, I could probably talk to you all evening, but as you mentioned, you're on your way to training. You've got a big game to prepare for on Saturday. So I'll say thank you very much for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, Adam, and best of luck for the rest of the season.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tim. Nice to speak to you.
Rounding off this week's news, time to head on over then to Non-League Paper Towers, our standard destination at this time of the week. And it's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Senior writer David Richardson, welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. Good to be back on. Hope you're all well.
Well, I'm well, but I've read the 162 pages of the DCMS fan-led review of football governance. We've spoken to Stuart Fuller of Lewis about it. It's fairly positive about it, and where it hopefully is going to take football, and I think it's been fairly well received across football, including the non-league game. But I think concern from my point of view is that there's not too much mention of the non-league game. It does focus on the higher echelons, and if we're going to rebalance power, maybe the non-league needs a bigger focus.
Yeah, the report is very detailed and thorough, and you know, I think Tracy Couch has done a really, really good job with it. It's you know, she's spoken to so many clubs and leagues and basically of everyone who's involved with football, fans of course as well, as the title suggests, and yeah, it's really sort of monumental effort, and you know, from
and
people
a government report turned around within a matter of months as well. It can be done.
Yeah, it can. I don't know, that might be bad news for the rest of us. We're sort of coming up with big documents and things like that. But no, it's certainly impressive. And you know, everyone sort of, you know, you speak to almost has sort of had some sort of input at this, whether that be, you know, clubs and leagues, etc. And you know, the feeling is that this sort of thing has been long overdue, really. And so it's a big day for football that the review has come out. As for non-league and the lower leagues, I think you're right in the sense that maybe, you know, more detail would have been welcome to say steps three to six and sort of their involvement in terms of, you know, finances coming down the pyramid and how that money will filter through. So I think you know there's a fair amount in there about the National League, but I think sort of beyond that, you know, I think maybe the rest of non-league might be thinking, well, you know, what's going to change for us as such. But you know, on that, I think, you know, there is so much detail there in the review, and it covers so many different aspects that, you know, at times there will be sort of bits of detail that, you know, won't be in there, and I'm sure those things, you know, will come through. And you know, ultimately it's about sort of getting reform for the bigger picture of the game, and then, you know, that then hopefully benefits everyone. And then it's about how things like money and finance sort of gets redistributed throughout the pyramid. You know, and there's so many sort of different aspects as well to the review, you know, that, yeah, we could be here talking all day really about the different things. But yeah, I think for non-league it's probably sort of one of those wait and see type sort of moments almost. You know, that's you know, it's not to say that non-league clubs didn't get their chance to speak out. You know, they certainly did, and I know lots of clubs and leagues spoke to Tracy Crouch and gave evidence. So, you know, they have very much been heard, and that's the same with supporters as well. And you know, I think, yeah, ultimately that, you know, today, you know, when we look back in sort of 30 years time, you think, oh, that was the day sort of, you know, football change, and that was when the first cog started turning, really. So lots to digest.
I made reference to someone that today about it. It's a bit like having one of those clear the air debates with the gaffer or something like that in a changing rooms, you know, sort of it's one of those pivotal moments. But as you said, there's so many things that will now come from it, and you know, I'm sure there'll be other little subcommittees looking at this and that, and maybe other little groups springing up. We spoke to Fair Game on the show the last week, and I'm sure they've got ideas as to how they can get involved. It was good to see a good proportion of submissions acknowledged by the roof from known non-leaguers and people that understand our level of the game. I think that was the big positive for me from all of that. Perhaps understandably, there was a survey of 20,841 people, but that was apparently skewed by more supporters of clubs in the Premier League. And I appreciate that that's the highest level of the game. That's the cash cow, and that's where the big focus was always going to be. And many see that that's where the changes need to occur first. But I'm just... Yeah, I just hope that that doesn't skew some of the results, given the high numbers of fans of and a multitude of non-league clubs up and down the country, that this is going to impact in the long run.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it won't. I think that's sort of one aspect of evidence that was included in the review. I don't think it goes some way to showing sort of attitudes towards leagues, but you know it's not the complete picture, and I think that's also sort of referred to really in the review. But like you say, so many things in there that we'll sort of take a bit of time, but I think it's actually important to stress that you know that it's been recommended and pushed, and government have backed it today as well, and you know it's going to get sort of moving and acted on quickly, and I think that's the key really, sort of almost keeping the momentum beyond today, and you know making sure the fire doesn't go out quickly, and you know we don't all forget about this in a few months' time, that you know we're talking about it again early next year as like I said, the cogs start turning, and that is does seem to very much be the plan. So yeah, sort of one to sort of watch and keep an eye on for sure. But you know, hopefully a really pivotal day today.
Yeah, and you know, for the last 2 years, you and I have been discussing the need of non-league football to take advantage of the peculiar situation, difficult situation that we found ourselves in through COVID, and make some changes. And as you say, the fact that people are backing this, there's a groundswell of movement to make changes. So hopefully, I don't know if I'll still be reporting on non-league in 20 years' time. You probably still will be, David, but it's sort of it wears you out. I might not even be here. Who knows? But, you know, no, as you say, it might be one of these you know big moments when we all remember November 2021. Talking about people remembering November 2021, elsewhere, the managerial merry-go-round has been in full swing this week. Firstly, it put a smile on my face to see John Steele appointed as head of football at Southend United. Again, you and I have spoken so much about the need for the club to understand non-league football fully if they're going to progress back to the Football League. And as if the knowledge of Darren Curry and Mark Bentley wasn't enough in that dugout, John Steele is, well, a tremendous set of expert eyes and ears to that equation.
Yeah, absolutely. That sort of very much completes the management setup and changes there at Southend with John Steele. And like you say, yeah, you can't really get anyone more experienced in non-league or have any more sort of contacts or know-how in the game and you know, in terms of knowing players and everything really. Yeah, sort of very much sort of the godfather of non-league really, isn't he?
You know, you and I think you'd be better, but, you know, you and I'd be fairly decent on a quiz show, wouldn't we, about non-league football. And but if you needed to phone a friend, I think John Steele would be there, wouldn't he? He'd be on your list.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, still obviously hungry to be involved in the game, 71 years old. But, yeah, still wants to be involved, obviously stopped managing about a year or so ago at Maidstone, but clearly sort of has that hunger to still be involved in football. So yeah, interesting to see what Southend can do now that management team's in place. But you know, obviously they need to start picking up some wins and points to move them out of relegation danger in the National League, because they're still down there at the moment.
Yeah, and I think that's the big important thing for Southend fans in particular to be patient, because that is a team that knows non-league probably better than one you could probably assemble if you were allowed to pick who you wanted. But they're in a difficult position at the moment, and it is a case of making sure they get through this season, I think, before they can concentrate on going for the bigger prize and trying to get out of the division.
Well, yeah, quite. It's sort of stabilising things really this season, isn't it? I think, you know, probably Southend fans came down into non-league hoping that you know, they could, they'd be part of a sort of promotion push, really. And you know, when they're spending a wage budget of 1.4 million, that would signal that you would be up there. But of course, you know, football doesn't work like that. And things haven't been going their way. So yeah, they need to steady the ship. And manager Kevin Maher sort of spoken about that, about the need to do that. So yeah, you know, I think now that they've got those foundations in place, they can really focus on that. But not getting much easier going up to Altrincham on Saturday.
No, they're the tough games, whether you're a fan, a manager or a player, aren't they? Yeah. Talking about experience, elsewhere, Paul Carden has left Warrington Town after a great spell there to take up the vacancy at AFC Telford. A tough challenge there at Telford, because they've hit bottom spot this week in the National North, but I'm sure he sees a potential and opportunity there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, obviously a club in Telford that's underachieving for what it is there. And yeah, they've gone for Paul Carden, which is, yeah, I think a good appointment. Obviously done well in his previous job, and you know, I think that's probably the natural step for him. But yeah, like you say, not going into an easy situation by any means. Rock bottom of National League North with only 9 points from their first 14 games. So yeah, a bit of a baptism of fire going in there. But you know, I think they've got a good man for the job. They've taken some time over the appointment. I know they sort of were looking at a couple of others, as has been sort of well publicised over the last few weeks. But you know, eventually they've got a good manager in there. So you know, they can start looking up and getting themselves out of danger.
Yeah, and you know, you say about a baptism of fire. You know, they've got a tough trip, a fairly long trip down to Felixstowe and Walton United in the FA Trophy this weekend.
Yeah, that's it's probably not sort of where you want to be going, really, is it?
I mean, I suppose we talk to new managers, and you know, they say that coach trips are a great way to bond and get to know your players, but that's a long journey in anybody's eyes.
Yeah, quite. And yeah, I think suddenly sort of any tie really in the FA Trophy against a lower league team becomes difficult. But yeah, particularly sort of going away there, yeah, it won't be made easy at all. And you know, you always get a larger crowd for these sorts of games who are expecting an upset. So yeah, not quite the one that Paul Carden would have wanted to got underway with, I'm sure. But you know, had to start somewhere, didn't it? So yeah, I mean, hopefully there's not an upset on his first day, but we'll look out for it.
Yeah, Warrington have been quick to promote Carden's former assistant Mark Beasley to the top job in the hope of maintaining the great success they've had there in recent years. Which again, we seem to be talking week in week out of managers taking jobs when their clubs are actually in quite a good position.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's sort of similar to Canvey Island. Obviously, we're talking about Mark Bentley and Southend there. You know, it's sort of about stabilising, really. I suppose they're just trying to carry on that good work when your manager moves on. It's a strange situation, but I suppose it's part and parcel, really, of success in non-league. But you know, if you're at lower level, clubs will be looking at you like clubs look at players, and that's the same for what we're seeing at the moment in the National League with a few managers being linked with Football League jobs. You know, there is always sort of someone above looking down, looking for the next sort of hot property, really. So you know, that's I suppose, you know, the club's lost, but another's gain. But you know, I guess the positive is that they're in a good situation, in a good position, and you know, they'll be hopeful of carrying that on. But yeah, it's certainly a blow, and you certainly don't want to see it. But you know, I always do like to see people who you know, are doing well rewarded with a move higher. You know, often sort of say that not enough non-league managers sort of get their chance in the Football League. I think I think a lot of non-league players now are getting their chance in the Football League. But yeah, it's not quite the same for managers. So, it's, you know, seeing them move up through the non-league pyramid, you know, is always a good thing, really, in my eyes, even if it does come at a cost of the club they're leaving.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, elsewhere in business, we always talk about, and even, you know, in the England setup, they're always talking about this succession planning and that sort of thing. So to have your assistant that's been alongside you there for a number of years to take over the hot seat, it makes complete sense, particularly with them, yeah, Warrington Town sitting sixth in the Northern Premier, just outside the playoffs. They'll be looking to try and get up there. It's a sensible approach. But you mentioned there about, you know, some of the Football League clubs looking at National League bosses, and, you know, so one moment you're flavour of the month, and the next, you're one of those retyping your CV to try and get a new job. But Anthony Johnson and Bernard Morley on that unfortunate pile this week. I know, much disappointment all round, but as a club wanting to get back to the National League, I guess results just weren't good enough there at Chester.
Yeah, myself, sort of surprised by that one, really. You know, Anthony Johnson and Bernard Morley, very well-known non-league managers for their time at Salford City, but also at Ramsbottom, which I think sometimes gets forgotten, the promotions they had there and what they did for the club there. You know, they went to Chester at a time when they'd just been relegated from the National League, so it's always difficult going in then. They had some financial problems as well, so it was a case of really trying to stabilise things, which they did. And then the following season after that, they got into the playoffs. And then when things came to an end last season, they were third, I think. So, you know, they were really sort of building things and going well. And, you know, I think Anthony Johnson said this summer that it was sort of the best squad he'd sort of worked with, or you know, he's really sort of talking up his recruitment. But, you know, obviously it just sort of hasn't worked out, and they've struggled a bit this season. But, you know, I'm personally sort of surprised the club's made that change. I mean, I haven't seen any of their games or know the complete ins and outs of what's been going on. But it just seems to me that, you know, if you have two managers like that, you know, maybe they should be allowed one off season where, you know, things don't quite get where they don't quite get things right. And you know, and maybe if it was me, I'd sort of take the approach of saying, well, just get through this season, as long as we don't go down, you know, have an eye on next season to try and sort of work out which players you want to keep and where you want to go, and then, you know, let's have another go next year, kind of thing. Because I don't believe managers sort of just turn rubbish overnight. You know, they'll go somewhere else, Anthony Johnson and Bernard Morley, and have success somewhere else. So, you know, I don't see why that couldn't have been with Chester. So, yeah, a bit surprised, but you know, I suppose that is football nowadays when results aren't going well. Yeah, and interesting now to see who comes in.
Indeed, modern football management full of surprises, even at non-league. Yeah, maybe the strangest one on Thursday, Stratford Town announcing the appointment of Tim Flowers in the top job there, with the very successful Paul Davies appearing to have been sidestepped.
Yeah, a bit of a strange one, I suppose, in the sense that Paul Davies still seems to be there, as far as I'm aware, but. Yeah, I guess it kind of goes to show the life of a manager there, and Tim Flowers, in that, you know, he did a good job at Solihull Moors, and even when he left, I think there were only a few points off the playoffs in the National League. You know, then he went to Macclesfield Town, which obviously never got off the ground, because, you know, they were liquidated. And then he went in at Barnet last season, and had a really sort of torrid run there, and you know, all of a sudden now he's in step three. You know, no disrespect to that level or Stratford, but, you know, it's a big change from when you've, you know, gone from being someone who's tipped to become the new Chesterfield manager, and as he once was at one time in the National League, to then being there. You know, it just goes to show the way things can swing and the way football can change so quickly, I suppose. So yeah, but I think, you know, he'll be looking at that to really, really be keen for success there at Stratford, because you know, probably from yeah, obviously what happened at Macclesfield and Barnet, his last two experiences haven't been too positive.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll speak to him, and you guys will probably speak to him in the coming weeks. As ever, plenty to report on the FA Trophy this weekend, plenty to read on Sunday morning. Anything in particular we should be looking out for?
Yeah, so lots of reaction on the fan-led review, of course. We're gathering some views from clubs, leagues and supporters on that, seeing what they feel about Tracy Couch's report. I've spoken to the Woolley family, which is sort of a story that you may not have come across this week. Last weekend, four brothers all scored on the same day. Two for 1874 Northwich and two for Lowstock Reelham in step seven. So it's a bit of an unusual one, that. I've also spoken to Brad Wellman at Canvey Island, as we were talking about earlier, with Mark Bentley moving on. He was Bentley's assistant and has stepped up, and they've just kept on winning, really. So I found out a little bit about that and his step up. We've also got lots of FA Cup previews, because of course that comes back next weekend in the second round. Lots of good ties, Buxton, Yeovil. Who else? We've got Borehamwood as well on the Monday night. So loads in there, covering sort of all bases, really. Football, governance, fixtures, tables, all that sort of thing. So complete package, I think, on Sunday.
Well, and as always, just refer to non-league, it's working for the non-league paper is far more exciting than working for My Dog Weekly. You know, you don't get these variations. David Richardson, always a pleasure to get you on the non-league football show. We'll look forward to reading the non-league paper on Sunday, and thank you, and we'll speak to you soon.
Cheers, Tim.
That's it then for this week. Thank you to all of my guests as ever, and for all of you for listening. Do please let us know where you are listening from too. Great to hear from more fans of the show across the world this week. New Zealand, Canada, and Norway this week. It's great to know that well, people are staying in touch with the non-league game, if only that, but also enjoying what we do here. Don't forget, you can follow throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Public, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you, and goodbye.
The Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA. JABBA.